Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Well, welcome to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Joe Bender. I'm in for Neil Stavem this week and just having a great time, having lots of different conversations about many different subjects. And I was kind of joking with Ted, my producer this morning, that I think Neil kind of set me up today.
Maybe a little entrapment going on in the topic, huh?
I think that there was some entrapment. I think maybe he thought this would be a good conversation for me to have, or maybe he and my husband were collaborating.
Could be. We'll get to the bottom of it sometime, maybe.
We're going to figure it out. Well, our topic today is understanding the man you love. And, of course, I've been educated on that for 17 years of my marriage, maybe a little bit more than that, and also educated by just reading this book. So if you're a woman listening today, maybe you've had some questions about why the man that you love acts a particular way or doesn't act a particular way, and you want to get some of those questions answered. Well, today would be a good day to do that, because my guest for today also received some questions from a lot of different women asking really what they wanted to know about the men that they love. He used that data along with his own experience being married for 30 plus years, as well as surveyed a number of men and came up with a book called Understanding the Man You Love. So we're going to dive right into that with our guest for today. Let me tell you a little bit about him. His name is Rick Johnson. He's a best-selling author of several books, including That's My Son, That's My Teenage Son, That's My Girl, Better Dads, and Becoming Your Spouse's Better Half. He's also the founder of Better Dads Ministry and is a sought-after speaker at many parenting and marriage conferences across the U.S. and Canada. Rick and his wife, Suzanne, live in Oregon. And to find out more about Rick Johnson, you can visit betterdads.net, or you can go right to our website at myfaithradio.com and click on Connecting Faith. We'll have information about Rick there as well. Welcome to the show, Rick.
Hi, Joe.
Well, hi. It's great to have you here.
Thanks. It's great to be talking to you today.
Well, I love the books that you've written on sons, because I have two of those. And so I had already read That's My Teenage Son. And that's because that's a mystery I can't figure out on my own as well.
Well, and you're not alone. So a lot of women apparently have that problem.
Well, it's this area that we have never experienced, just like the one we're going to talk about today. We've never been a husband, so we can't always figure them out from the perspective that we've had. We don't always see everything. So hence your book. What gave you the idea to write this? And really, was there anything that surprised you coming out of all the research that you did?
How I actually started writing, I'd written a book a number of years ago on authentic masculinity called The Power of a Man. And it was written for men and very well received by men, but interestingly enough, it was very popular with women as well. I guess because women were very interested in what makes authentic masculinity, what that looks like. But I started having a lot of women contact me and say, you know, we really like that book on authentic masculinity, but what does authentic femininity look like? And beyond that, what are our husbands looking for in a wife? What do they expect? I mean, I'm doing the best I can here, right? But I don't know what I don't know. So, you know, can you write something that will give us sort of a guide to help us know what men's expectations are, what they really need, what their needs are, even if they don't know what their needs are, and all those kinds of things that I think women yearn to know and to understand, but don't, because they're not men.
Well, that is absolutely true. In fact, one of the questions that came up on the sheet that came with your book is, do men wish their wives looked like supermodels? And I thought, well, that's an interesting question, because we do tend to spend, I mean, we as a culture just tend to spend an exorbitant amount of time on the way that we look. But your book is more about, well, who is it that we are, so that we can bring out who our husbands or the people that we love actually are. So what did you find out about that? About whether or not men wish their wives looked like supermodels. I hope the answer is no.
Yeah, well, I think most women think they do, but I would say no, absolutely not. I mean, that'd be a heavy burden for most men. I guess if you look at it this way, probably a wife wasn't a supermodel when he married her. And he thought you looked fantastic enough that he chose to spend the rest of his life with you. And so two kids and 20 years later, he certainly doesn't expect you to look like a supermodel. I think there are some expectations of attempting to look good, look your best. Men are very visual. And, you know, we all enter into relationships, I think, with some sort of unspoken agreements, similar to contracts, if you will. And I think a woman who makes a great effort to look her best to attract a man and then lets herself go physically would be similar to a man who worked hard before marriage and then stopped providing after he was married. It would feel almost like breaking that unspoken contract, if you will.
So is there an expectation, really, once you get married, what you're saying is, whether you're the husband or the wife, that really making an effort for each other is part of being married?
I think both. I think the onus is on both people. Yeah, absolutely.
So when you started talking about what kinds of needs that a man has, one of the chapters I thought was particularly interesting is just the way that men and women communicate differently. Of course, I know I've read a lot of books on this subject as well. What are the main ways that men and women communicate differently, and what do we need to understand particularly about our husbands and how they communicate that's going to help us really in our own efforts with each other?
Sure. And biologically, I think females have much more highly developed communication skills than the average male does. Girls develop the right side of their brain faster than boys do, leading to, you know, earlier talking, larger vocabulary, early reading, better memory, things like that. Females tend to hear better, see better, have a better sense of smell and touch, and they're able to read emotions on a person's face much more easily than men do, and that gives women a big advantage in interpersonal communication skills, as she can pick up on nonverbal cues a lot more readily than a man can. But even beyond that, biologically, things like the corpus callosum, which is a bundle of nerves that connects the left and right hemispheres of the brain, a female has a much larger corpus callosum than a male does, which allows the two hemispheres of her brain to function much better together and communicate back and forth a lot easier than a male's does. MRI scans that have been done on brains during verbal communication found that when females talk, generally both hemispheres of her brain light up at the same time, indicating that brainwave activity is taking place. When she stops talking, one side or the other stays lit and the other goes dark. When men talk, one side or the other lights up, and when they stop talking, both sides go dark. So when a woman asks her husband, "What are you thinking about, honey?" and he says nothing, he's telling her the truth. We have the ability to shut our brains off when we're not involved in something. And if you look at, for thousands of years, a man's role in life was to hunt, to provide for his family. If you've ever hunted for a long period of time, you know that you have to stay perfectly still, not make noise. The ability to be able to shut your brain off and focus on one thing very intently is a very good skill to have, but makes it difficult sometimes to communicate with somebody who's so much more skilled in that area than you are.
Well, one of the tips that you give is that we need to give our husbands a little bit of space. Talk more about that.
Well, my wife is brilliant on a lot of different communication. In fact, a lot of these tips are from observing what my wife does with me. But, for instance, if she wants an answer on something, she probably knows to come up and ask me about it and say, well, you know, can you think about this for a while before you make a decision? And that allows me to process information. It takes me a lot longer to process information, to process my emotions, than it does her to do that. And so my inclination most of the time, if I get surprised with something and haven't had time to process it, is to say no. That's just the way I am, and I think a lot of males are that way. But give me some time to process, to think about it, to figure out how I feel about it. You know, I'll tell my wife sometimes, I don't know how I feel about that. And sometimes it takes me days or even a week to figure out what my emotions are. You know, the other thing is I think females need to not have the expectation that their husbands can instantly process information and emotions like females can. I've told my wife many times, look, you know, just because you can articulate yourself better than I can doesn't mean you're always right. She probably is always right, but that's not the point. The point is it's frustrating for me sometimes when I can't articulate myself because I don't really know how I'm feeling or how I think about a subject.
I thought that that part was fascinating about how you write that men are biologically created to be unable to process emotions and information as quickly as women are. So how does that tend to create some conflict in marriage?
Well, you know, particularly during arguments or healthy discussions, again, males can't process. First of all, we're not very good at understanding what our emotions are that we're feeling to begin with. Really, the only emotion we're very comfortable with beyond that is anger. And, of course, anger is not a very good emotion to rely on all the time. In fact, we'll use anger as a secondary emotion a lot of times to cover other emotions that maybe we're not real comfortable with, things like fear, anxiety, vulnerability, things like that. And it's an instantaneous process. It's not something that we think about. It happens automatically for most males. For instance, I can remember as a boy growing up in an alcoholic home, a very fearful environment. I can remember when one day it dawned on me that if I just became angry, I didn't have to feel that humiliating emotion of fear again. Mm. And I thought to myself, wow, this is great. I'll never be afraid again for the rest of my life, which was ridiculous. I just spent a good portion of my adult life being an angry man because I was really scared because I'd never had anybody show me how a man thinks, acts, solves problems, what his roles are in life and things like that.
So how can a wife help with that so that anger doesn't become the first emotion?
Well, I think a lot of times, particularly during a heated discussion, I think you will see a man will start backing off. He'll start closing down, not because he doesn't want to solve the problem, but because he's been fed so much information, maybe too much he can't process the emotions that he's feeling, how he thinks about things, and he starts shutting down. And if she continues to push him beyond that, he will either get very angry or he'll leave or something like that. And I think when a woman senses that she's reaching that point, it's a good time to maybe take a break. Say, can we talk about this later? I think it does a great service for a woman to do that. Because here's the deal. We know this. It's why we don't like to get into arguments with our wives, because we know we're going to lose. It's intimidating, again, to sit down across the table from somebody eye to eye who's so much more skilled at something than you are.
Well, I'd love to talk a little bit about timing, because I think that has a lot to do with what you're talking about. But we have to take a quick break, Rick. So we will come right back after that. We'll talk a little bit more about communication. How can we help to communicate effectively as women and as wives? And what are men looking for to communicate effectively with us? We'll chat more about that with author Rick Johnson. Understanding the Man You Love, the book for today. We'll be right back on Connecting Faith. Connecting Faith. We're talking about understanding the men that we love. Well, we hope it's just one man that we love, right? It's just one man. Sorry.
Yeah, we hope so.
Oh, that song got me thinking about weddings. I used to sing at a lot of weddings, and that was a big requested song for a good 2 or 3 years.
Stephen Curtis Chapman, can't go wrong. Still good.
Very, very popular. Well, we're talking to author Rick Johnson today about understanding the man you love. He took quite a lot of time to survey both women and men, questions that women might have about men, and then some answers that men would give if they had the opportunity to do so. And Rick, one of the subjects I love talking about is communication. It just feels like we're constantly learning how to communicate with each other, even after 17 years of marriage. And maybe you're feeling the same way. So I have a feeling that many couples kind of learning the ins and outs of how to best communicate, especially when you have some important things that you want to talk about. And one thing that I learned just from my own dad growing up and my mom is not to bombard him with questions when my dad first came home from work. If I needed to talk to him about something important, or my mom, or any of my brothers, when he first came home, that was not the time to bring it up. Talk a little bit more about that and why that's something we really need to understand about men.
Yeah, and I think men have a more difficult time. Maybe women do too, I don't know. But men for sure, transitioning from one environment to another. For instance, our work box versus our home box. It takes us a little bit to transition. I mean, you'd think you'd be able to do that on the drive home or something like that, but I think sometimes men have to be in the environment before they can actually transition into it. So what my wife will do, which is very, very helpful for me, is so, you know, when I come home, she might say something like, you know, honey, after you get a chance to unwind a little bit, I'd love to run a few things by you. Let me know when you're ready. No big deal. Now, it's really important that she says to me that it's no big deal, because then I'm not worrying about it, right? While I'm trying to underwind, what I'm wondering what I'm in trouble about, right? So, you know, those kinds of things. The other thing is to, you know, again, male's very visual, to understand that if he's watching a big game on TV or something like that, it's not a good time to try and engage him. My wife will say, hey, I have a question when the commercial comes on. You know, come up and get a hold of me so I can ask you a question or something like that. I was talking to a woman a while back, and she's just like this brilliant marketing guru. And so I was really interested in what she was having to say to me. But behind her in the next room, over her shoulder, I could see her husband was sitting in a chair watching the basketball game. And I'm trying to listen to her, but my eyes keep automatically going to that basketball game in the background. And I literally could not pay attention to what she was telling me. I finally had to tell her, look, we've either got to shut the door to that room or he's got to turn that TV off, because I can't pay attention to two different things at a time here.
Oh, that's so true. In fact, I have learned that about our house as well. If there's anything on that is it's a distraction to any of us, really, but especially for my husband or my teenage son. If anything's on, it really just pulls our attention away from the conversation that's taking place.
Well, males have the, you know, a God-given ability to concentrate and focus on one thing at a time very, very deeply and accomplish great things because of that, but our multitasking skills suffer because of it. I can't, you know, my wife can cook dinner, talk on the phone, listen to the radio, bandage a kid's wound. All at the same time, my head would explode if I tried to do all those things at one time.
Is that also the reason why it takes until day two or three of a 7-day vacation for men to kind of engage and participate?
That is absolutely the truth. You mentioned that, and I'm thinking it always takes me at least 2 days before I can relax and get into the vacation environment, if you will, the relaxation environment.
Well, or even wanting to make a decision. I just have found that I need to be really exact about what we're going to do for the first 2 days so that he does not have to choose anything. Or maybe that's just me. Maybe
right.
I'm really controlling, Rick. We should have a show on that.
I don't know. I personally, I'd be glad if my wife laid out everything for 2 days so I could relax and not have to worry about making this. You know, men make decisions all day long most of the time. And kind of nice to not have to do that occasionally.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's just something that, you know, I've observed as we've kind of just gone through life together. And a lot of your tips are kind of trying to help us know before we even get into that situation, really what men and women are like, how they communicate. One of the things that I thought was really interesting is you talked a little bit about conflict as well, that who we are and how God made us has a lot to do with how we engage in conflict as well. Can you talk a little more about that? What do we need to know?
I think I briefly alluded to it a little bit, but I think women need to learn to fight fair. Again, when males how we're created. When we get into an altercation or a discussion, our amygdala tends to develop a fight-or-flight response, and we automatically get certain hormones released that cause, you know, blood pressure to rise and adrenaline to be injected into our system and things like that. So we tend to get amped up pretty quickly during times of conflict. And again, because women are so much more verbally skilled than a male can, she can pretty effectively eviscerate, I think, a man during an argument if she's not careful. The problem is, I think women can do that, but, you know, what's more important, winning the battle or winning the war, which is, you know, it's easy to win a battle, but you end up losing the war in the long run. Hmm.
So when you say fight fair, well, what does that mean? How can we fight more fair? Or how are women not fighting fair?
Well, I first of all, and I'm not sure what causes this, but clearly women can remember everything that's ever been said to them, categorized by date, time, things like that. And I think a woman that uses those kinds of things, the other thing is that my wife tells me that women have a lot of internal dialogue that takes place in their heads, and sometimes they get upset and angry about things that a man doesn't even know he's done, and those things kind of stew and pile up and fester, and I can tell you that from my experience, men don't have a lot of that kind of internal dialogue going on. Usually what you see is what you get.
Two things about that. First of all, I have had people say to me when I'm running on the treadmill, what are you thinking about? You look very angry. And it's usually because I'm reviewing a conversation that took place or that could have taken place. And so I know that I'm prone to do that. I don't know if that's customary for all women. But the other thing is that I have a 9-year-old son. He remembers everything, too, especially if I've promised him that he's going to be able to watch, you know, an extra 30 minutes of TV if he cleans up his room. And it was 2 months ago.
Right.
So that does...
Yeah, anything that borders on a promise, they have instant recall on. Well, and, you know, it's kind of funny, but like when I go in, I have to go in and get a shot occasionally. And whenever I go in and I, you know, and the nurses, if they're kind of grumpy, like, you haven't been arguing with your husband this morning before work, yet, because I don't want you sticking that needle in me when you're mad at men, you know.
Well, that would probably be a good point. Rick, we have to take a break at the end of the show. I just want to let people know that we do have a few of Rick's books to give away. And if you'd like to get that in the hands of someone who may be wondering how to meet the needs of the man that they love, well, give us a call, 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Or maybe you're listening today and you have a question you'd like to ask, maybe something that you don't quite understand about the man that you love. Rick would be willing to answer those questions as well. We will take your calls after we take our break. And also, feel free to call or write in. You can write in at myfaithradio.com. But just go to Connecting Faith, click on that show page, and there'll be a space there where you can enter your name or you can do it anonymously. Enter a question there. I'll try to get your question on the air and see if Rick can answer that as well. So we'll be coming right back after the break to talk about Understanding the Man You Love with author Rick Johnson. Coming up. Oh, welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks for joining us today. There are some days when Ted has more fun with music than others, and I think that today is one of those days, Ted.
It's kind of a softball, yeah. I have to hit it out of the park. Yeah.
I can't wait for the next break to see what's coming up next. Well, welcome to the show. We're talking to author Rick Johnson today about his book, Understanding the Man You Love. How can we, as wives and as women, support men in really their needs and who they are? And one of the areas that has been a challenge, at least in recent years, Rick, you write about that masculinity has really been redefined. So how has it been redefined, and how is that affecting men?
Yeah, and I, you know, clearly it's been redefined, and some good and some not good. certainly, in some good ways, I think, for instance, probably started somewhat with men of my generation, but certainly the younger men today, the millennial generation, are much more interested in being involved fathers. Prior to my generation, a man's role primarily in life was to provide for his family and work, and that's, you know, those were the expectations that they met, and there was nothing about having a good relationship or, you know, even telling your kids you love them. So, you know, I think those are good things. Part of the problem that we're facing today is the high percentage of fatherlessness. Again, males, very visual, without a role model, especially a father, for them to see every day. Very difficult for a young man to understand what his roles in life as a husband, as a father, even as a man are. And we tend to emulate what was modeled for us, and so we're seeing a high percentage of young men today that are abandoning their families because that's what was modeled for them. Not because they want to, but again, when we're not aware of what's taking place, we tend to emulate what was modeled for us while we were growing up.
Well, I thought it was fascinating. You wrote about how there tends to be a trend from men whose fathers left at some point, left the family, that sometimes fathers who have no intention of leaving their family will get to that same age at when their father left them. And I don't know if I'm explaining this very well, but talk a little bit about that trend and why that happens. And is there anything that we can do, that women can do, to maybe stop that from happening?
Yeah, and I see this, and I'm not sure what scientific evidence there is to back it up, but I see this a lot, that, for instance, if a young man, his father left the home, divorced the wife, his mother, at age 9 or something like that, he will grow up and likely he will say, good men that I know will say things like, I will never abandon my kids, I'll never leave. And pretty soon they'll split up, and I'll ask him. I say, "Well, how old are your kids? How old's your son?" And he'll say, 9 years old. And I'll say, "How old were you when your dad left?" And he'll say, 9 years old. Hmm. And it's really a revelation, and it's just again the power of that model that we, especially for males, I think we're so visual that that's imprinted almost in our psyche, and we tend to model those footsteps or follow in those footsteps that were modeled for us.
Well, conversely, then, if a man or a boy has a positive role model with his dad, even though the culture has really changed a little bit and the definition of masculinity has changed, like what you were talking about, will he be more grounded then to make wiser decisions?
Well, I absolutely think so. Clearly, boys and girls who have mothers and fathers in the home do much better in all areas of life. Virtually every measurable outcome of success that you can measure in life, they do significantly better than kids that come from single-parent homes. Mm. That's not to say that single parents can't raise great kids, and do. They've raised millions of them. It's just, I think we have to be aware of it. And you ask what wives can do, and I think, first of all, being aware of that, going into a situation, because part of the problem with following in the footsteps that were modeled for us, for lack of a better term, is that we don't know what's motivating our decisions. I'll give you an example. So I'm talking to a guy from South Korea, and he says to me, "We have a really high rate of fatherlessness in our country." And I said, "Really, why is that?" And he said, "Because our economy is really bad, and men would rather abandon their families than suffer the humiliation of not being able to provide for them." And I thought, wow, I wonder how many men in our culture subconsciously or unconsciously follow in that sort of same logic or reasoning, mm-hmm. without even knowing what's motivating that decision that they make. So, you know, I think being aware of it, talking about it, understanding, you know, being educated in the potential, that's the first step of breaking those generational cycles, if you will. And we see generational cycles that get cast on from one generation to the next all the time, whether it's abandonment, addictions, abuse, those things tend to get passed on from generation to generation. And the way that we break them is to become, first of all, educated about them, understand what's causing them, and then take measures to make sure that we eliminate the things that cause them.
Hmm. So really reading up on these trends and being aware of, by reading books like you've written, is a great way for women, for wives, to be aware of the potential.
Getting counseling, absolutely. Things like that help us to break those generational cycles. And men that do break those generational cycles, they're hard to break. So men and women that break them are to be commended, because they're very difficult to break those cycles.
Well, let's switch gears a little bit. You write about friendships and the importance. We hear about women and friendships and relationships all the time, but we don't hear a lot about the importance of friendships among men and those relationships. Why are those important, and how can wives really support their husbands in continuing and developing those relationships?
Yeah, and I think friendships are vastly underrated for men, and I think we need them a lot, if for no other reason than we need to be held accountable. I was very fortunate, after I became a Christian, to develop a group of friends. And we all had kids, and what was helpful for me, especially coming from the background that I came from, was that I had a group of men that I respected, and maybe their kids were older than mine, maybe they were younger, but to talk with them about, you know, the different stages that their kids were going through, what to expect, how they dealt with it, what worked, what didn't work, things like that were hugely important. The other side that was really important for me was that they could tell me things that I needed to hear that I probably wouldn't have received very well from my wife, like, you're wrong or you're out of line in this situation. You know, men I respected could say those things to me, might not have received them very well from my wife.
Mm. Although sometimes...
Now, how women can help, again, because women are very relational, I think it's important for women to be intentional about developing friendships with other couples where the wife and the husband are good people, good men, because I think that will naturally help a man to develop a relationship with another man, as opposed to expecting him to walk up and introduce himself and sit down and have coffee and chat with each other like women do.
It does get a little more challenging to meet people and develop friendships as we get into that middle stage of life, doesn't it?
It does. It's really difficult. And my wife and I made a decision a long time ago that we were just going to try to reach out to as many people as we could. And we knew going into it that we would get rejected probably a pretty high percentage of the time, not necessarily because people were bad, but they have their own agendas, they have busy lives, they have their own struggles and problems, and maybe they just weren't right or the timing wasn't right. But I think it's still important for us, especially as a couple, again, to reach out to as many couples and develop some sort of friendships, because you're right, it is really difficult to maintain. As transient as people are in our country right now, moving every 2 years, very difficult to develop long-term friendships, which are hugely important.
Well, and those friendships also help our children as they're growing as well, especially our teenage boys, correct?
Absolutely. To have other people that can, you know, fortify our value system, especially when your kids become teenagers, of course, they don't listen to you. We're ignorant, right, as parents. But they'll listen to somebody else that they respect, another adult. And so it's important, again, to have, I think, friends, extended family, things like that are very important.
People tell me, though, that my wisdom is going to increase as my son gets older. Is that true?
Yeah, he'll start thinking you're smarter as he gets a little bit older. But
for a little bit of a time being, though, I'm not very wise. But that's okay. I will take it.
Pretty normal, yeah.
So one,
I don't know if mine still think I'm ignorant or not.
Well, at least they won't tell you. So that's probably a good thing. They might think it, but they won't
funny.
Say it.
It's funny because people will come up to, like, my son, and they'll say, oh, gosh, your dad has written all these books on parenting, and have you read them? And you know, what do you think of it? I don't read them. I grew up with that stuff, you know? He's like, no big deal, you know? But so it's kind of funny, though.
I remember my mom was a youth director, and so many, many high school kids came to our house at all hours of the day or night and wanted to get her counsel and just sit down and chat with her. And I remember one of my friends saying, "You're so lucky. You're so lucky you can talk to your mom about anything." And I said, "No, you can talk to my mom about anything."
Exactly. Right. Hey, you know, Joe, I was going to tell you, too. You asked me at the beginning of the show if there was any research that I did that surprised me.
Yes.
With this book. And there was one thing that surprised me. And I don't know why it surprised me, because I've written several best-selling books on mothers and sons and the importance of moms and boys in lives. But women were asking me about, what about my husband's mother? You know, what about my mother-in-law? How does a man's relationship with his mother affect his marriage? And I had never really thought about that. And the most frequently asked question I got from women was, do men marry their mothers? Now, a lot of women told me also that they felt like they were paying for the sins of their husband's mother. And so what I did is I took, I think, 50 men and asked them if they would answer a survey that I put together about their mothers. Now, men don't do that kind of stuff anyway. So I thought I'd get a very low response. Amazing, every single man returned the survey, and they weren't one-word answers. They were actually quite verbose in their answers on all of the different questions. So I got some pretty good feedback, I think, from men on the importance of their mothers in their lives and what that looks like. But when women asked me, do men marry their mothers, the answer is sort of. I think men who had good relationships with their mothers might consciously or unconsciously select a woman with similar character traits as their mother, and men who had poor relations with their mother might consciously choose a woman with directly opposite the type of woman that their mother was. Mm. I think the problem, the big problem that I see with a man and his mother is that a lot of times men don't properly cut the apron strings, if you will, when he gets married. Because most men, you know, want to respect their mother. They love their mother. Very important person in their life and development. But when they don't cut those apron strings, that allows animosity to develop and exist between the two most important women in his life. And a man really needs to make it clear that his wife is the most important priority in his life after he gets married. Not that he doesn't still love and respect his mother, but that he should cleave to his wife and place her needs first. I think it eliminates a lot of that tension between mothers and daughter-in-laws.
Sure. Well, how does the man's relationship with his mother affect his marriage? What did you find in your research there?
Well, I think there's a lot of areas that it affects his relationship with his wife. His mother is the first important female figure in his life. She teaches him things like, you know, how a woman loves a man, what kind of respect a man deserves to get from a woman, all the different things that, you know, what love looks like between a man and a woman. So, you know, those things are very important, and they can directly affect the way a man relates to his wife, how his mother and father interacted with each other. If a woman is contemptuous, a mother is contemptuous of men, maybe she was abandoned by her husband. It can do great damage to a boy, and as he grows up to be a man, he can carry those wounds with him very deeply.
Well, that makes me think that the things that I say, everyone hears in my family, so it certainly encourages you to hold your tongue. That's usually my prayer.
The mother guilt coming out again, right?
Yes. You might have to write another book about mother guilt, but we'll discuss that on the next show. We have to take a quick break, our last break. If you're listening today and you'd like to get a copy of Rick's book, we do have a couple of giveaway. You can give us a call at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. I think we have one left. Carissa will answer your calls. Otherwise, you can go to myfaithradio.com and click on Connecting Faith. If you have a question for Rick, we'd be happy to try and get that on the air, and you can enter it that way. We'll be right back. We're going to talk a little bit about what women should do if they feel their needs aren't being met. So we'll turn the tables a little bit and see how Rick can answer that question coming up on Connecting Faith.
This will be an everlasting love. This will be I've waited for. This will be the first time anyone has loved me.
Welcome back to Connecting Faith, having some fun today talking about men and women and marriage and understanding the man you love. It is possible, according to author Rick Johnson. We just need to educate ourselves a little bit and really just look into maybe how to experience us, meaning wives, on the other side. What is our husband experiencing? Rick, one of the sections that you wrote about was talking about, what does a wife do if she feels like her needs aren't being met? She may be with kids all day. She may have to acquiesce to the needs of her boss, to the organizations she volunteers for, and she feels like maybe her needs should be met as well. So what should a woman do when she feels that her needs aren't being met by her husband? You had some great advice.
Yeah, I think it's a common issue. And understandably so. Let me say that I would sympathize with women that in a lot of ways men, I think, are more selfish, and we probably are more self-focused than we are on meeting the needs of meeting our own needs rather than meeting the needs of our wives. Let me throw out some things here that's probably going to get some hate mail generated for you.
No.
But bear with me.
I'll pass it along.
Okay, and then you can tell me what great advice I have, because I'm not remembering what great advice I have. But let me give you some thoughts on this. First of all, I tell women all the time about this tremendous power that they have to either motivate or deflate the males in their lives. And literally, a woman's words can inspire a man to do things that he would never accomplish on his own if she weren't whispering things in his ear like, I believe in you, or, you know, I have faith in you, things like that. On the other side, a woman's disappointment or resentment or contempt can literally emasculate a man, if you will, and cause him to shut down and shatter his self-confidence. So women need to understand that tremendous power that they have. Unfortunately, I think sometimes, again, we maybe have unspoken expectations, or we have expectations that are unrealistic. And sometimes, I would say, from a man's perspective, I think sometimes women's expectations are paradoxical. For instance, just as an example, some women make pathetically poor choices in the men they get involved with, and they let these men get away with everything short of murder. And on the other hand, some women marry perfectly good men and often have unrealistic expectations that they're impossible to live up to. So I think, first of all, understanding or examining your expectations to see if they are realistic or not is important. The other thing I think is that sometimes women don't understand what their needs are. They might feel like their needs aren't getting met, but if you ask them what are your needs or what needs aren't getting met, a lot of times they can't really tell you. They just feel that something's not being met. And so, again, for a woman to examine what her needs are, and then to be very specific, even blunt with a man, we're not real good at reading between the lines, and I know you think if we loved you, really loved you, we'd know what you need, but that's not the way we're wired to be able to conduct business. So to tell us what you need, I think most men are really want to make their wives happy. We just don't know how to do it, and it's hard to meet someone's needs if they don't know what those needs are. Another thing is, I think, contentment. I think a lot of men feel that their wives aren't content, and contentment is very important to a man, because a wife's contentment signals to us that we're doing our job as a man and a husband. So, for instance, when I'm downstairs in my office and I hear my wife upstairs maybe puttering around the kitchen humming or singing to herself, I feel really good. I feel like I've done my job as a man and a husband because my wife is happy and content. And lastly, here's what my wife says. Now, I don't say this, so don't send me any nasty letters. But my wife says that men literally cannot meet your needs if you don't meet his needs first. And if you think about it from the perspective, again, of, you know, for thousands of years, again, a man's role was to provide and protect. So it was important that he was healthy, that his needs were taken care of, that he wasn't exhausted or wounded or sick, because then he couldn't go out and hunt. He couldn't be prepared if a band of marauders or a wild animal came in to protect the clan. And so everybody pretty much made sure that his needs were met so that he could fulfill his roles in the family. And I think there's some validity to that. So anyway, those are just some thoughts off the top of my head about females getting their needs met. Hmm. Probably not what a lot of people want to hear, but.
Well, that was the advice I was talking about. The two things I was thinking about was, to be blunt, first of all, I think that sometimes women do tend to think, well, he should know. And instead, if you just tell him, chances are that he'll react to that very positively, and then to meet his needs first. And that was kind of along the lines of what I was saying. When someone gets home from work, whether it's me or whether it's him, it's that time to recognize that that person may need some time to kind of just relax out of the day before they jump into whatever it is that's required of them next, whether it's just eating a meal or hauling a kid off to hockey or, you know, getting some paperwork done or whatever that is. But that we all have needs. And if we can figure out what those are first for our spouses, then we can meet that need. And then chances are they'll be much more equipped to meet our needs as well. So those were just
right,
the two things.
In regard to expectations, I think sometimes it's important to understand. For instance, I had a woman tell me once, she was kind of upset with her husband because she didn't feel like he was doing his share of the housework. And she's stewing about it, and she said, you know, but one day I looked out the window and it was pouring down rain. And she said, my husband was out there cleaning the leaves out of the gutter. And she thought, I would never even think of doing that, that needed to be done. And it kind of transformed the way she thought about how much work he was actually doing, contributing to the household versus what she thought he was doing.
Oh, man, so important. And why I'm teaching my boys to do laundry so that they know. They know how. So when they go to college or they date someone for the first time and they're not bringing their laundry home to me, they actually know how to do it. So these are all good things, right?
Or his wife has just had a baby and he needs to take over
right.
all the chores and do the laundry, right? I mean, those are all important things.
Those are all good things. But you're right. Just knowing the expectation of what you're expecting before you get married so that you don't have to have that argument. There's just so many more things you can talk about.
Mm. Well, and we do a lot of premarital counseling with young couples, and they absolutely do not think about stuff like those unspoken expectations. We go in with what our family modeled for us. And that's probably pretty much opposite of what the other spouse's family modeled for them. And so
right.
it's important to understand those things and talk about them ahead of time.
Well, Rick, I can't believe we've gotten to almost the end of the show and I haven't asked you about work yet. And someone actually typed in a question about work as well. So I'd love if you can just address work. Why is work so important, of course, to men? What do women need to understand about that? And when your husband might seem preoccupied with work, What do we need to know about that as well?
Well, yeah, and I think a lot of women don't understand the importance that work plays to a man's psyche, to his self-esteem, to his self-image. You know, you will never get with a group of men that almost immediately somebody doesn't ask, what do you do for a living? I mean, it kind of defines who we are to some degree, for right or wrong. And we have certain expectations built into depending on what kind of an occupation someone has. So very important to a man. It's, you know, the two mandates that God gave men were to provide and protect for his family. So, you know, providing is very important. And nowadays we have a lot of women who are probably the main breadwinner in their home and not done carefully. I think that can create some tension as well. So, you know, your comment on if a man is preoccupied, first of all, I would say that a woman needs to understand that if she in any way complains about their circumstances and the standard of living that they have, that he will never work less, probably.
Hmm.
And so, you know, I think being encouraging and helping him to understand that you're satisfied and happy is a way to get him less focused on work than complaining about it.
Well, Rick, I think we're going to have you back. We only touched on about 3 subjects of the 15 that I had written down. So you're going to have to come back another day. Thanks for your work on understanding the man you love and for sharing your wisdom with us. Good luck with the book and, of course, with your next project as well.
Great. Thanks, Joe.